Welcome back to FinTalk, brought to you by Vermeg. Here we discuss pressing topics in fintech, regtech, covering regulatory, collateral and digital across banking, insurance and finance. Vermeg has been proud to deliver innovative software solutions in these industries with stability and cost efficiency for our global roster of clients. With over 20 years of trusted transformation in finance and insurance, we're bringing the industry top experts to FinTalk. I'm Jared Akhtar and I'll be your host for this podcast. Let's kick off. Today we are continuing the topic on regulatory sector, and for today's guest, I'm delighted to have with me Hanbury Hampden-Turner, and I'll let Hanbury introduce himself and his role at Vermeg.
Hello there. Thank you, Jared. I'm Hanbury Hampden-Turner. I'm the head of regulatory product for European region, including the UK, and I'm also the firm's functional authority. So it's my job to interpret the rules on a global basis as and when it's necessary. So yeah, I'm happy to talk with you all here today.
Fantastic. Thank you, Hanbury. So today's topic, I really want to kick on the idea of horizon scanning. So here at Vermeg, we look to be quite proactive and we engage with all our clients about roadmaps and what we're doing and what the regulatory landscape looks like. So without further ado, just want to touch base on what's happened in the regulatory landscape for 2021, Hanbury. Could you able to kind of give us a really high level summary of what 2021 happened, what it looked like and things that changed?
Well, I mean, certainly we've seen some very big changes in 2021. Not least the big changes that have still been manifested now. We've got the changes to counterparty credit risk. That was a very major component of the change to the risk calculations applying to derivatives, SFTs, and products that go through a clearinghouse or central clearing member of some kind, and the credit risk around those. So that was perhaps the sort of single biggest piece. But there are also many changes to leverage ratio, to net stable funding ratio, and also to some of the COVID-specific rules that we've seen. We are seeing more COVID legislation changes coming through there, and those are still being tinkered with as we speak.
Thanks, Hanbury. I just want to touch upon the EBA side of that at the moment. I know the EBA went live with a lot of their changes as of June, and then the European market is kind of well into those changes. I know the changes coming forward. So just kind of want to touch upon how we've dealt with that at Vermeg and what impacts you've seen.
Well, it's an interesting situation. So obviously from the start of this year is the first time for a great many decades that the Bank of England and the EBA have been separate in terms of the regulations that they're choosing and are forging in separate paths. And that's had an interesting effect. Obviously, the EBA have tried to put their changes in first. They tend to go with longer lead times than the PRA and the FCA. And the PRA have made their own versions of the templates. So we have the PRA-specific versions of most of the templates that were covered under COREP. This is perhaps an important point for some of the listeners because although the content hasn't changed very much, all the cell references, all the templates have. So the old submission protocols may not work as, depending on how you've got your system set up, the old submission protocols may not work anymore. In terms of the actual substantial content, we've seen only very minor variations between the two. So the PRA have published their own rules towards the EBA published their rules first. The PRA published very similar rules. The EBA then published additional rules towards the end of 2021. And now we've seen it towards the start, in the start of 2022, the EBA publishing similar rules to catch up with where the PRA was. So rather than the PRA sort of breaking away and the EBA breaking away from each other, we've actually seen a tendency for the two to follow each other. The PRA has published a lot of stuff that the EBA have covered. The EBA have seemed to move their stance on certain areas to match what the PRA has done, which leads to a sort of an interesting spiraling effect. You have the two regulators both verging to converge with each other, but at different timescales. So at any given period, you might be in one stage of the EBA rules and a different stage of the PRA rules, or vice versa. It makes tracking the things month by month and quarter by quarter quite challenging.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Hanbury. Thanks for that. And I just want to, now that we've covered what's happened in 2021 and what we're doing in 2022, so from a Vermeg platform point of view, I know that we've launched Agile MI, so a comprehensive MI dashboard. So just kind of looking forward on a regulatory landscape, And for all our listeners who will be quite keen in terms of their horizon scanning, their planning as well, on what they're going to be doing for the next coming, at least next 18 months. Kind of at really high level, the things that have changed, the things that are coming in, we know obviously the new IFPR went live as of 1st of January. The first reference reporting date for CRR2 goes live at the end of March. So outside of those, you know, what else should firms and kind of listeners, you know, look out for?
So, yes, I should have mentioned IFPR as being one of the things that the rules changed last year. But as you say, it went live at the start of this year. Most of what we've seen in quarter one this year is rules going live from things that were set up last year. So IFPR, we've got investment firms reporting under their own new set of rules for the first time. That's quite an interesting situation we've got there because the IFPR rules are much simpler than the banking rules, but they do rely upon firms hitting certain criteria to mean that they can report as investment firms with certain characteristics. And if they don't hit those criteria, then they end up falling under the current rules by default using the KNPR factor. And that's quite a serious problem because the KOREP rules they default to are far more complicated than the K-factor rules that they're using. So you can very easily get a situation where the IFPR firm has only a very limited exposure to KNPR, but that limited exposure is more difficult to calculate than all the other K-factors put together. So that's been quite a dramatic event. Obviously, we're also seeing the first instantiation of the counterparty credit risk going live for the first time this quarter for reporting in May. And I suspect that's going to be an event because certain banks are probably not entirely set up the way the regulator expects them to be to do this reporting. Positions divided into netting sets and hedging sets. And those sets have to fulfill a fairly lengthy list of different criteria to make sure that they can be accepted. So you are going to get some banks who are going to be not effectively netting or hedging in a way that simply wasn't a choice for them before, but is now something they have to optimize. And you're also going to see banks who are having to abandon some of their netting and some of the hedging simply because they haven't got their factors aligned correctly. So I think there's going to be a certain amount of ructions over that, and as I said, over IFPR. The other issue with IFPR, of course, is that it's very unclear from the rules, at least from the point of view of the people who are following them, whether or not firms fall under IFPR or not. And there's been lots of discussions with regulators about that. Other things happening in Q1. Obviously, we have the high earners report, which is being implemented for the first time. And that is additional disclosures and reporting on who earns what in the bank. It's obviously very confidential from the point of view of the bank and very politically important from the point of view of the regulator. So a relatively simple return on the face of it, but one that they are unlikely to treat lightly. So yes, and the other thing to remember about the high earners report, the Core 15 report, is that the format is changing from XML to XBRL. This is perhaps the opposite way around to the way certain tech leaders were thinking it would move. The assumption has always been that XBRL was kind of going to be moved away from, but looks like the regulator is actually moving towards it. So particularly in the UK, we're probably going to see more XBRL in future rather than an abandonment of the standard in favor of XML. There's also all the sort of minor changes that we were discussing from last year that are now being instantiated for the first time, change in net stable funding ratio, a lot of change around the definition of capital items. So the rules so much have not changed as the definitions of the rules. You always have to be careful with regulators introducing what are in effect new provisions simply by changing the definition of existing terms, because they don't tend to get announced as changes, but they do have an effect. In particular, they've changed the boundaries on what's considered as Tier 1, Tier 2 items of capital, which is obviously going to have a significant effect on a lot of our customers. And there's also changes to leverage ratio. So this looks small. They've changed leverage ratio templates for the PRA in particular, and they've introduced a lot of new measures that people have to look at. They've started measuring monthly average values for the first time, rather than just treating it as a spot value at the end of each quarter or at the end of each month. So you have to take a monthly average of the values, which is going to catch some people on the hop. The other point to mention about leverage ratio, of course, is that because leverage ratio combines capital and credit risk, including counterparty credit risk, the content of the leverage ratio calculations is going to be changed by all the counterparty credit risk changes that have been made. So all the counterparty credits material, which is now calculated on a totally different basis than what it was before, is now going to have to flow seamlessly through into the leverage ratio and be combined with data that's been calculated under the original credit risk. So that is, again, something that may catch people off guard. And then, of course, there's the elephant in the room, the biggest change to statistical reporting in several decades, which is the SRDD changes. This is a big change as they gradually shut down the XML-based OSCAR platform and move all the reporting onto BEADS, which is the XBERO-based platform. That's being done gradually from Q1 to Q3. So the AS and AF returns are continuing in BEADS, which is a new platform. Everything else can be reported on either platform up until September, at which point OSCAR is being switched off. So the content, as I said before, the content is substantially the same as for some of the other changes, but all the cell references are different, all the validation rules are different, all the reporting solutions need to change to a new format, to a new platform, and to a new submission process. So again, that's likely to be catching some people by surprise. The other one that's just worth mentioning briefly is IFRS 9. IFRS 9, it was a big change made to the accounting rules. It didn't have a huge impact on the prudential reporting, except having to change all the accounting information and prudential reporting to IFRS 9 for firms that are using it. But we are now seeing IFRS 9 concepts starting to creep into some of the regulatory reporting. So there's IFRS 9 modeling being put into the capital return, particularly in the transitional provisions. We're seeing IFRS 9 concepts appearing more and more in the FinRep, not only in the IFRS side, but also on the GAAP side. So irrespective of which standard you use, some of the IFRS 9 accounting concepts are now being cited by the regulator as something that they can ask for. So again, that's something interesting to watch for.
Fantastic. That's a lot to look out for. I'm just going to summarize because I think there's quite a lot of information there that I want to make sure that our listeners are on top of. So obviously investment firms, the IFPR, I know we're having a lot of conversations with investment firms, and especially around, you know, if there's any queries around the changes between IFPR and COREP, then yeah, happy, you know, Vermeg obviously supporting that whole regime. So feel free to kind of reach out to us.
Yes. I mean, in particular, we're having conversations about what is covered and which companies and which subsidiaries are covered, because some of these companies are having to report, you know, information for the first time or include subsidiaries for the first time. The definition of subsidiary is extremely broad and goes beyond just ownership to anything that's connected to the company or anything which you might have influence over, so a favored customer. So there's a lot of different, and there's also a cascading series of qualifications for using certain rules on the IFPR regime, beyond which, as I said, you default. So yes, we have had a lot of conversations about the scope of that.
And then also the Core 15, which is the high earners report. I know that was a big issue around that last year from the regulator. They switched it back to the Rep 4 or Rep 5. So we're fully supporting that. And then yes, the format change from XML to XBRL. The PRA leverage return, which is obviously coming out of the EBA now, so you don't need to report the LR on the EBA. You'll need to report it under the PRA. Capital changes, Tier 1, Tier 2, which is quite important, and it's going to affect everyone. Obviously, the IFRS 9. But the biggest change, like we've said, is the OSCAR to BEADS. Yeah, the XML to XBRL, there's huge changes. I know quite a lot of our clients are in phase one, and there's going to be quite a lot in phase two. So there's definitely, watch this space. There's going to be a lot more information coming through as that kind of transition happens.
Yes, it's also worth pointing out we're working directly with the Bank of England on that one. We do have a close working relationship with the Bank of England on statistical reporting particularly. And we have been testing some of their validations and some of their submission processes and discussing with them some of the results we're finding.
Yeah, and we've shared a lot of those FAQs as well that we've got from our testing as well to our client base. So there's a lot of information there. So if there's anything there our listeners want to kind of dive into a little bit more detail, feel free to obviously reach out to us. Henry, I know how busy you are and I appreciate you taking the time and doing this horizon scanning, the first one. I'm sure there'll be many more. And again, thank you to all our listeners, and look forward to the next session.
Many thanks, and thank you for having me.
Thank you.